Welcome to Farmscape Online. I'm Bruce Cochran. My guest is Dr. Megan Niederwerter, the Associate Director of the Swine Health Information Center. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Niederwerter.
Thanks for having me, Bruce.
The Swine Health Information Center, as part of its September newsletter, has released its domestic and global swine disease surveillance reports. What are the highlights of this month's reports, and what is the significance of those observations?
Yes, so for PRRS virus over the month of August, we did see a reduction in the overall percent positive detected from August compared to July, which is good news. However, there continued to be regional increases above 3 standard deviations in Nebraska, Missouri, and Indiana. And the Diagnostic Advisory Group also highlighted that there's been an increase in the detection of lineage 1C, 124 across the U.S. and many of the highest pork producing states. They are continuing to monitor that lineage 1C that's been detected and working with the producer and veterinarian advisory group to understand the clinical relevance and importance of that specific lineage strain. And so we're continuing to monitor that. For PEDV, we saw a similar detection in August compared to July. However, there was continued to be regional increases in Minnesota, Iowa, Kansas, and North Carolina. The good news for porcine delta coronavirus was that we actually had the lowest detection of that virus in the U.S. to date since 2018. The percent positive detection was just 0.42%. So that was good news. And the advisory group did comment on the industry standard of increasing biocontainment protocols and procedures. Again, that has played a role in the reduction of porcine delta coronavirus.
Looking specifically at the PRRS lineage 1C, how does that virus compare with other PRRS viruses, and what actually differentiates it?
Sure. So it's fairly similar, actually, to the lineage 1C strain that emerged in Minnesota in 2020. And again, a fairly new strain, this 124 RFLP strain. What we look at when we evaluate sequences of PRRS is that, of course, we look at the nucleotide sequence. So what's the genetic makeup of the virus? And is the genetic makeup different enough than other PRRS viruses that have historically circulated to, one, consider it a new strain or consider how the underlying immunity of pigs would provide protection and immunological support for the specific strain that we have sequenced? So I think it goes back to the importance, particularly for those states that continue to see regional increases in the diagnostic utility of sequencing your PRRS strains to understand what's circulating, what's potentially the best vaccine option for the strain that is circulating in your herd, what's the divergence of the strain in your herd compared to either herds in your state or throughout the U.S. or throughout the world, and really keeping an eye on the genetic divergence and of PRRS virus that is circulating in your herd.
How do the diagnosis and treatment compare, and what do producers need to keep in mind in that regard with this lineage?
Certainly, different lineages have different characteristics with regards to pathogenesis. So perhaps they would have either increased or decreased clinical signs, severity of clinical signs in certain age groups. They may be more stable in the environment. They may have higher transmission rates. And so it goes back to Certainly PERS virus is one of a virus with one of the highest mutation rates. And so we have to know that that virus inherently changes over time. And so thinking about how that may present in your herd, let's say if you had a clinically stable herd with PERS virus and you start to see an increase in clinical signs or a divergence with regards to the type or severity of clinical signs, we want to make sure that we are monitoring that and also submitting samples for sequencing to evaluate, has there been a difference in the genetic composition of that virus? How similar is it to either the vaccine or autogenous vaccine or commercial vaccine that I may be using in my herd? Is it still going to provide protection? And really keeping an eye on how the virus is changing in your herd if you are PERS positive.
With regards to PDCOV, what have been the factors that have contributed to the decline in this infection, and what is the significance of that?
Yeah, I think that's really important to highlight successes in the industry. So thinking about porcine delta coronavirus and its introduction in 2014 initially, and the continued concern about this virus as an ongoing threat to our industry, and then implementing those practices and strategies in your herd to reduce coronaviruses in general. But specifically, we've seen this decline with porcine delta coronavirus. I think that is a success in some of the aspects of the industry's biocontainment and bioexclusion procedures and policies that have been put in place. One of the aspects that the advisory group did want to caution, though, however, is that oftentimes porcine delta coronavirus is only screened in breeding herds that have pre-weaning pigs. So thinking about how that would impact those younger age piglets. Oftentimes, because porcine delta coronavirus does not cause a severe disease in post-weaning pigs, there may not be as much surveillance. So if we think about the overall detection of this virus, we really think about that this has been reduced on a national level at the breeding farm in particular.
What are the highlights globally?
So foot and mouth disease virus has been on our radar for global detection because there have been substantial outbreaks, particularly in Indonesia, since May of this year. They have seen quite a few foot and mouth disease virus infections. Approximately 500,000 animals have been infected so far. This is primarily cattle, but there have been also some pigs infected. They have started to deploy a strategic vaccine campaign to contain and reduce foot and mouth disease virus spread. So far, they have vaccinated approximately 1.6 million livestock. And specifically, we've seen the Australian government really step up to help their neighbors. Of course, there's a close geographic proximity between Indonesia and Australia. They've announced recently that they will be supporting Indonesia with approximately $10 million in biosecurity packages to assist Indonesia in response and also help prepare Australia for potential FMD. So thinking about what they've provided specifically Australia to Indonesia has been help with vaccination. Also, Australia has really increased their border protection with regards, again, to that close proximity. So implementing strategies at the border and airports to help prevent the virus from being introduced from Indonesia to Australia. And then also Australia has been focused on their preparation, again, for a potential incursion. But hopefully with Indonesians, with the vaccine campaign currently ongoing in Indonesia, we will see a reduction in those FMD outbreaks. We've also seen ASF occur in new herds in Russia over the last month. So this was the month, approximately the end of July, we saw the first outbreaks in commercial farms in Russia in 2022. So of course, commercial farms had been previously infected in Russia, but not in 2022. So this is the first time that they had reported commercial outbreaks. We've seen in Russia approximately 5 premises now affected with ASF in these commercial sites and approximately 25,000 pigs. We also saw some significant news out of Vietnam this month with regards to ASF. Vietnam has temporarily halted the use of the ASF vaccine due to pigs dying post-vaccination. This is the vaccine that was initially developed and researched by ARS, USDA here in the U.S., and then was licensed to the National Veterinary Medicine Joint Stock Company, Nevetco. They had started producing the vaccine and inoculating pigs with the vaccine to protect from ASF. And what they had seen recently was that in approximately 600 pigs were vaccinated, 100 of them died, and 400 others had adverse reactions. So the company has deployed a team to the region of Vietnam where they were seeing these reactions and deaths to investigate if the deaths and reactions were truly due to the vaccine usage and its appropriate inoculation, or if there is something else that was impacting these pigs outside of the use of the ASF vaccine.
Looking specifically at the FMD outbreak in Indonesia, how does that change the level of risk for North America?
Yeah, so when we think about FMD and the high stability of FMD virus, it's non-enveloped, so it has a high stability in the environment. We know that it can survive well on fomites in meat products. So when we think about an outbreak going on in Indonesia and the number of animals affected, the difficulty that they have had in containing the virus, it's been fairly distributed throughout the country, and the number of animals affected, it increases the risk, of course, to the rest of the world until they get the FMD situation under control in Indonesia. And so the vaccine campaign, of course, will reduce not only the impacts on the animals as far as clinical signs, but of course, the replication of the virus, the environmental contamination, and will hopefully control that outbreak to reduce the risk to the rest of the world, and of course, reduce the impact to the livestock in Indonesia.
And looking at the interruption of the use of the new vaccine in Vietnam, what are the hopes or the expectations as the investigation moves forward?
Yeah, so this is concerning because the ASF vaccine has undergone safety and efficacy testing, but this is the first time that it has undergone field usage. And so when we look at how it is utilized in the field, we of course have to think about some variation in or investigation into how the vaccine was handled. This is a modified live virus vaccine, and so the virus has to be maintained as live to be effective for protection of the pigs. So that should be investigated, of course. Was the vaccine produced and used in the fashion by which it has been approved for protocols? So thinking about the handling of the vaccine, the age of the pigs in which they received the vaccine, was there potential for the pigs to have already been exposed to ASF? So could they have died due to ASF as opposed to wild type ASF infection versus a reaction or result of the vaccination. And so these are all questions that really need to be investigated and determined, not only for the release and continued use of the vaccine in Vietnam, but of course, thinking about, will this vaccine ever be used in other parts of the world? And what is its safety and efficacy in field conditions with large numbers of pigs? And so we will continue to monitor this as the information is gathered and the data is released to try and further understand if this was truly a reaction to the vaccine and it was used in its approved form and protocol versus something occurring in the field that was inconsistent with how the vaccine should be used.
And is there anything you would like to add?
Anytime that anyone needs any additional information, of course, there is more detail in our global and domestic disease reports. Those can be downloaded in PDF form on the swinehealth.org website. And then if with regards to the domestic disease response and the swine disease reporting system, there is a day-to-day dashboard that is constantly updated that may be able to provide anyone additional information and real-time surveillance with regards to endemic diseases.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce.
Our guest has been Dr. Megan Niederwerder, the Associate Director of the Swine Health Information Center. For Farmscape Online, I'm Bruce Cochran.